Chili Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Shelly.
February 13, 2023, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. This is the show you are looking for. How do I know that? Because you're hearing me say what I'm saying. So it is Moon Day, Monday, first broadcast day of the week at O'Shelly.com. But do pay attention in the next couple of weeks because some days are going to be replays. That's the way it's going to go. A lot of people have asked me about archive shows, so I'm going to bring some old shows back out and play them in my live slot and re-release podcasts because I've been taken off of platforms and everything else, and people are complaining. We never got to hear that. We didn't know you did that. Etc. You ever thought of having this person on? Yeah, about 6 years ago. Anyway, all of that's happened, and I wanted to just let you know that Mondays might be a live day, might not be, depends, starting at the end of this month for sure, and by the time my birthday rolls around, we'll have a whole new format going here on the network. So, hope you guys enjoyed Get Mad with Chris Graves earlier. He had Donald Jeffries as a guest. There's no podcast out yet, but don't worry, it'll be out there by tomorrow along with this one. Now, to explain what's going on, I'm going to do this now. I mentioned a couple of times on air that Glenn Vikeland would join me and that a recent email contact informed me that Glenn was not pleased with me. Now, I'm not going to speak on this. I'm going to give Glenn the first opportunity to speak about what happened and why. But I'm going to give you a little bit of a recap in case you forgot or you're new to the show. Glenn Vikeland has been on my show many times. He has been on my show, I think the first appearance might have been under a JFK Myths show. Glenn, to my knowledge, pretty much believes that Lee Harvey Oswald is the, I don't know if lone assassin or a assassin, but definitely guilty when it comes to the JFK assassination. But Glenn has actually researched the topic and has a differing opinion from mine. Nonetheless, his opinions and his facts regarding certain people who masquerade as witnesses in this case, those are my words, not Glenn's, some of the stuff that he's revealed about said people has been absolutely accurate and valuable, and he was a good, important part of some of those myth shows. See, especially the one where we focus 2 hours fully on Judith Berry Baker. Anyhow, that is, I believe, how Glenn and I actually initially sort of got introduced to one another. But that's not the story tonight, not at all. Now, Glenn has been on the show for other reasons. He's also an economist by training and, I believe, by trade. And I wanted to get his opinion, especially considering the fact that he is, well, someone familiar with American culture, but not an American. He is from Sweden, indeed. So, an international perspective, this is the kind of thing I like to go for. And I have done that and have invited Glenn on the show specifically to talk about the monetary situation and other things in other countries. What does it look like from the European or Swedish perspective, etc., etc.? I think that's a fair summation. But about 6 months ago, I was doing a show with B. Pete, which I do on Fridays, and B. Pete has been the co-host there for quite a while. And we do the call-in show, and we were talking about fuel and exactly how things are working and how we're getting ripped off, and I was making certain points. And B. Pete started to make points about the differences about fuel and the way it works in Europe, etc. And Glenn happened to be in the chat room. Something ensued in that chat room, which I do not have a full memory of. There was a bit of a dispute. Glenn wanted to call into the show that night, but the show was almost over. 2 weeks later, Glenn was on the show. And he was on the show to handle whatever that dispute was with B. Pete. This is my version of the story. Quite frankly, it didn't go well, as far as I'm concerned. And I found it editorially, as a broadcaster, I found it to be a useless broadcast because I felt as though both of them were interrupting each other. It was hard to listen to it because the recording is just very messy that way when people talk over each other on things like Skype. So during a break, I said, I don't think this is very productive. It was pretty hostile, I thought, and not getting us anywhere. And Glenn left the show at that point during the break. We continued on and finished it, me and BP. Now, I was not pleased with the whole thing, was not happy with the way it went down, but moved on. Apparently, Glenn did contact me the next day, and when I looked back in my emails and things, and sent me a chart about a point he was trying to make, but frankly, I was just rather disappointed and wanted to let the whole thing pass by and go away. I believe in December of last year, somewhere in there, Glenn contacted me again and said that he had felt bad about the circumstances there and wanted to straighten out the record in some way. And I'm not getting into the details of the email here, just giving a general idea. And I said, fine, Glenn, but I'm about ready to take a break. When I come back from my break, because I'm quite exhausted just generally, personally, when I come back, let's schedule you to come on the show. And that's what I've done, and it took me about this long to get him in on the schedule. No fault of his, and no intentionality for me to avoid him. This is just the way it worked out. Now, that is my side of the story, essentially. There's more I could say, but I don't want to. I'd rather that Glenn explains his version of this story. And I don't know, this might be confrontational. I'm not somebody who aims for confrontation on this show. I'd much rather discuss and educate. Some people want me to confront people. You ought to call people out. You ought to yell at them. You ought to do this. I'm really tired of trying to do any of that because I don't find it to be very productive 99 times out of 100. So I'm not looking for a confrontation here, but if that's what comes, that's what comes. Glenn might have some things to say that I'm not going to like, and I might have some things to say that he's not going to like, but I have not scripted this or pre-planned it. I've simply invited Glenn on, and although it took me a few minutes to get through the microphone issue with him, I didn't delay him coming on air live, although we are late live on the live stream. You people hearing this podcast will not care or know. But either way, I had no pre-discussion with Glenn about this at all, and just basically said, I'm going to let you tell your side of the story, and that's what I'm going to do. So Glenn Viklin, again, repeat guest, has been on many times. I'll just ask you how you're doing and then tell you go right ahead and tell people what your version of events is and whatever it is you want to say. So how you doing, Glenn?
Thank you, Chuck, and thank you for that very kind and informative introduction. I agree to every word you said. No problem. I have no problem with anything of what you just said. The thing is, since that, I call it the mudslinging contest because that's what it was really. And, was it, you said it was I believed it was in April, wasn't it? Well, it doesn't matter. It's quite some time ago. And, since then, I've gotten a few questions, both from US guys and from Swedish guys. You do have a number of listeners, occasional or otherwise, I think, over here in Sweden too, who have asked me about this. You know, they've not heard the actual, I think, but they've heard about it, what happened. And so I've got a lot of questions over these past 8 or 9 months or whatever it is. The first thing I want to say is, first of all, yes, I did send you that note about the issue at hand, the taxes and energy and all that. So if you've read it, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And that was the issue that I wanted to bring up during that discussion, but that never came up. And that disappointed me then. And that I think was the reason why things got out of hand. Because what happened, if you do remember, so let me recap a little bit here. What happened was that before the show, considering chat room between me and BP, was it a week earlier or something like that? I knew here we do have a risk of things getting out of hand completely. I could feel it all the way for several reasons, actually. But so that's why, if you remember, and I think you would agree about this, that I said, I don't want to get into a mudslinging contest. So what I did was I sent to you and to, I think you distributed this to VP with a number of issues at hand that we could discuss. And if you or VP had chosen any of these issues, these things that I suggested, let's choose one of these or a couple of these and we can discuss it. We have 2 hours. We can discuss all of it. And if, BP or you would like to discuss also, taxes and energy and all that, how that works in the U.S., versus how it works in most European countries, fine. But it never got to that. And when I've been discussing this, which I did, as late as a couple of months ago with a Swedish friend of mine who is an occasional listener of you, and he knows you also as a JFK researcher since way back. And he said, I've heard about that thing, and can you please explain what happened? Mm-hmm. And then we got into a discussion for a couple of hours about what happened. And he said, well, what I think you should do, if what you're telling me is how you see this, then you should ask Shilk. Why not? Has he banned you? Well, not as far as I know. He's never asked for my participation in his show any longer. That's for sure. But he, as far as I know, he's not banned me. And I haven't looked at the chat room since, I think, the day after that mudslinging show occurred. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of the basics of the story. But when I called you I contacted you in December, I had the time to think about this for a little bit more and the details of it. And what struck me was a few things. And you can interrupt me whenever you want, Chuck. That's fine.
Okay.
What happened, I mean, you've always been very, very fair and very, we've had a good relation, as I see it, for a long time, in many different shows, both before the show and after the show. We've discussed things. For sometimes hours, I believe. And that's never been a problem. But when this particular show was coming up after this debacle show, or the debacle, I should say, in the chat room had happened, you know, the quibble between me and Pete had happened, you did not want to talk to me. It was impossible. For the first time, all these shows, if it's, you know, 15 or 20 shows I've been participating in, you just said, no, I have no time. I don't want to discuss it. And I didn't think too much about it at the time, actually. But, you know, considering what has happened since and after, of course, I've been wondering a little bit about that. And if you remember, just a couple of weeks before, the show took place. Mm-hmm. I actually redistributed a few of my sponsorships. I had sponsored you with a few bucks every month for some time. Mm-hmm. And I do remember the response you gave me was, are you mad at me? And I told you, no, Chuck, I'm not mad at you. What I'm doing now is I'm redirecting yours and a few others that I'm sort of contributing with money to Ukraine, because they will need this money now after the war had broken out, or the Russian invasion had broken out. And I didn't think of this much at the time, or not at all at the time, actually. Mm-hmm. But when I think of how you acted before the show and also during the show, because you were absolutely silent during the show when Pete and me and myself were slinging mud. Mm-hmm. At each other. And before this, I had also, you know, apologized for what we said in the chat room a week before, or a few days before. He refused to apologize to me for what he had called me. Mm-hmm. And then at the break.
Can I stop you here, and just explain a few things that you've mentioned so far? Okay.
Yeah. Fine.
Here's the way I see it, I understand that you might have thought that I was being silent, but it was almost impossible for me to get a word in, which was due to the actions of what I feel was both of you, and my intent was to sit there and just let the two of you discuss it and step out of the way, which is what I did mainly, and I was hoping that the two of you would come to a civil rhythm, both of you. and that did not happen.
It surely didn't.
So
I agree.
My only options there in my mind were to take the break and see if I could somehow convince everybody, look, take your turns here. And I believe I tried to do that during the break. Look, what do you want to do? Because if you want to make this so that this can be something that's heard, you're going to have to take turns here. And I know he was mad at you for cutting him off, and you were mad at him, I think, for cutting you off. And I was trying to establish that, and it seemed as though the level of hostility was there, that that wasn't going to be done. So I suggested perhaps this is a failure. We should not continue with this because it's pointless, and it's going to be pointless for somebody to listen to it. They're going to hear a useless two guys yelling at each other, not over issues, but just yelling at each other. And really, I thought it was senseless. It was coming out senseless. So for me, what I'm concerned about is what the listener is going to hear. If you two want to argue privately, you could do that all day. It's not my business. But if you're going to do it on here, I want the listeners to be able to hear it. And if you're going to argue even, you have to trade spaces, because on the Skype especially, only one person speaking at a time works so that people can hear it clearly. This put me in a rough position because either I would have to start muting or hanging up or really taking hold by yelling over each of you. And quite frankly, I've never been all that successful. Once B-Pete starts to roll, I can't stop him. And I clearly couldn't get you to really stop either, although that night I would say you were easier to stop than he was, but not much. I could not get control of that verbally. So I felt as though either the two of you must step back and just, you know, thoughtfully take turns, or this isn't going to work at all. And I was fine with you going. Now, when you went and I came back from the break, I said, look, Glenn decided to leave because that was your decision. I didn't force you off. I didn't want anybody to think I kicked you off, because I did not. But I said, look, if this is the way it's going to go, though, this has to end one way or another, because I don't think this serves a purpose. Now, that is my version of that story. Perhaps you don't see it that way. But my actions that night were to get out of the way, I thought, so that two men would have a discussion, whatever the issue was. And frankly, I didn't pay much attention to what the issue was outside of it began with this issue over oil and tax and how it works differently in Europe as opposed to America. I didn't pay attention to it because I felt like, okay, if they want to have a dispute over that or whatever else, let them. And I know there was some name calling in the chat room. I don't recall it exactly, but in my mind, I believe there was some name calling in the chat room. B-Pete might have called you names on air. And the following week, when I thought you were going to show up, you didn't. And I think you might have just, you know, fallen asleep or whatever. It's very late where you are as opposed to where I am. Very understandable, but it was a two-week period in between that night when this started and when you came on. And I just said to myself, well, one thing I've got to do here is let this cool off, because I'm not going to attempt to do this again next week, because I don't see how it'll be any different unless each of them take time to cool off and back off. That is literally my whole thought process about that. Now, about this issue over money or whatever, do you mind if I disclose what it was you were donating?
Yeah, of course.
Okay,
sure.
No, I'm not going to. I don't do that without somebody's permission, just so you know.
No, but that's fine.
Okay, so matter of fact is that you were dropping in, I think, $5 a month, right?
No, eight.
Eight. Huh.
Yeah.
Okay, is that like your money or in American dollars?
You mean the currency thing?
Yeah.
No, well, no, I, dollars. That's, that was an option, I think, when I began.
Okay, well.
Giving you a few bucks.
Well, let's
and you know,
let's agree to this.
No, there's, no, but that's no big deal. You
no
may be
deal.
Right. I'm wrong, but I feel pretty sure.
Okay.
That was $8.
Well,
yeah.
Here's what we could probably agree to. It's less than 10 American dollars, right?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Fair enough. So the less than 10 American dollars, whenever somebody is, and you had it on a regular payment once a month to come to me, I appreciate those, and I don't live basically without those. So when I see them disappear quite often, when somebody cancels a subscription like that or cancels a donation, I will ask, you know, did I do something that caused you to cancel that? Often I will word it as, are you mad at me? Because usually, quite frankly, that's the reason. It is because someone is angry with me that they have decided, I'm not going to give you my $5, my $7, or my $2, whatever it is. I'm not giving it to you because you pissed me off. This is usually what I get.
Okay.
So I don't know what's in your head. I don't claim to. So I said, you know, did I make you mad or something? And you said, no, I have decided to, and I remember the phrase you used, I've decided to redirect my charitable donations to Ukraine, which is effectively what you just said, because they need it. Now, I don't disagree with you. And look, it's your money and it's your donation, and by all means, what can I do? I just wanted to take note of why it is you canceled. That's all.
That's fine, Chuck. I just want to mention it because it was an afterthought, as I just said.
Oh yeah,
that this might or may not have anything to do with this.
Well, I wanted to get.
But I'm gonna continue. Just give me one second.
Let me just finish this.
Yeah, sure.
Because I want to make this very clear. This had nothing to do with any hostility. You canceled it. You made a different decision. That's fine. I just wanted to know why, number one. Number two, I will tell you, though, that I don't see what you were contributing as charitable, as a charity donation, because I feel as though it's a voluntary contribution to something that occasionally you use. So you're helping pay for, because it costs me money to do all this. You know that. So you're helping pay for something that you get, which I offer for free, and then hope that people will contribute to making it work, all right? That, to me, is not a charitable donation. So I was a little like, okay, you see me as a charity. Fine, but whatever. Your disposable income or loose income that you wish to make contributions with for whatever the purpose, look, if you decide the children need it this month, and I don't, or what, these are your decisions. I wouldn't criticize or judge or anything. That's up to you. And clearly, the situation in Ukraine.
And that's fine.
No. I'm just saying, clearly the situation in Ukraine caused, more than just you, told me that was a thing they were doing, by the way. So you're not the only one who said to me, look, I would like to continue to be a subscriber or this or that, but frankly, I'm giving every dollar I can to Ukraine. I got that from a couple of people. I got it, and I got many instances over the past 2 years where people said, look, the problem is that the economy's shifting on me and I don't have the money, and you're one of the things I had to cut back on. And so I said, okay. You know, but I would always ask, why did you cancel? You know, in most, if I knew somebody, you know, somebody who's a complete stranger.
Had you told me, why did you cancel that? I would have sort of taken that a little bit different than, are you mad at me? Because those are two different sentences, really.
I understand, but I jumped to that conclusion that somebody's mad at me because
surprised. I should tell you, I was very surprised about that.
Well, but in the past.
The time, you know, I do know. And also, I don't see it as charitable, as you said. The money I gave you is because I think you're a damn good host, and you've always treated me with utmost respect and a nice guy, basically, which I've never met, but I've had very good relationships with is it 4 or 5 years or something like that?
Well, it must be at least
so
six.
That was the basics. It was not. And I knew you had sort of hinted to, not to me personally, but, you know, in your show, Facebook, perhaps, I can't remember, but, you know, it was clear to me you would appreciate a few bucks. So that was the reason. I didn't look at that as, you know, if I give to some UN organization or something like that. This was a personal gift from me to you, because I knew that you would appreciate it, and I would appreciate you accepting this money from me. That's the reason I gave you money.
Okay, but just to be clear, though, you see how we both have the same issue here, just for the record, is that I asked you if you're mad at me. You said that's a different sentence. Well, to tell me that you're redirecting your charitable donations suggests to me that I'm a charitable donation. So I said, okay, but I wasn't even angry at that. I was just kind of not happy, if that's what I am. If I'm a charity to you, okay. But I'm not happy about that, just like you're not happy about me asking, are you mad at me? But that was me skipping over a question, you see. Not why did you cancel, but usually when I have asked this question in the past, outside of 2022, when I got many different answers, like I said, where there was, no, I'm giving money to Ukraine, or I simply don't have the money because costs have gone up on me too much, which has been the answer for the past year when somebody has canceled or, decided that they're not going to do something they said they would do, contribute, what have you. So I have gone to the asking, are you mad at me? Because usually it's a yes in other years. This year, it's changed a bit. Now, so I'm just trying to make this very clear that that's where that was at, but it had nothing to do with this. To me, what happened is that I invited you on because you and B. Pete both wish to confront one another in some way. And I said, okay, let them do it. And I was hoping that it would naturally just work out into a conversation. And it did not. The two of you were not respecting each other's space speaking-wise either way. So I found it to be messy and unlistenable. I think I used the word unlistenable many times during the break, trying to make the point that this sounds terrible. I don't remember my exact words, but I'm fairly certain that's what I said.
Do you have that on tape? What happened when we were off air?
No, I don't record the breaks. Mm-mm.
Okay. Well, let's just move on from the money. I just mentioned that. I'm not saying that had anything to do with it because I've not finished my sort of take on all of this.
Okay,
yet.
Then I'll be quiet and let you continue.
But you were obviously prepared for that question. I can hear that. Mm-hmm. But that's fine, Chuck. That's fine. No, let's move on. No, some of the questions that I've been getting from a few Americans, actually, they asked me, have you been banned from Chuck's show? Well, as far as I know, I haven't. That's what I've said. But I haven't been in touch with them. And I do actually very much agree with most everything you've said up until now, because, there was a need for a sort of cooling period after that happened. Of course it was. For you, for me, for B. Pete, for everyone. That's not a surprise. When something like that happens, I felt sad. I felt ashamed. I felt bad for a lot of things that happened, and I was sad. But and let's move on from the fact that you didn't intervene. I think you've explained, you've given your version of that now.
Yes.
And that's fine. But the thing is, before we went ahead and had the show, I was very surprised of the fact that I didn't get any support from you when I suggested those different subjects to discuss. There were lots of, I guess you, I probably have the emails left, or if it was through some other communication that we did before the show. Mm-hmm. But there was lots of things we could have discussed, but as soon as the mics went on and we went on air live, there it was clear to me after 2 minutes that this discussion is not going to be about anything of what I suggested. It's going to be about what happened in the chat room a few days ago. And I didn't want to I apologized, and BP refused to apologize to me. And I even, the day after all of this happened, I apologized to you for being a part of this mudslinging stuff, because I was part of it, whether I wanted to or not. Mm-hmm. And I that's what I said. That's why I said, I feel ashamed about this. Well, I don't anymore, of course, but I did feel ashamed about this at the time, and sad that this has happened, that I've been part of something as bad as this went when it happened.
Well,
but let's move on from that.
Well, right. Now, I just want to answer a couple of things there, if you don't mind, just real fast.
Yeah, sure.
And it'll take me less than a minute. Nobody wrote to me about it. Within a couple of days, I felt like I need to just let that all go and forget about it because it just was a mess and I did not properly host the show. And the two of you did not mix well, and it was just a mess and therefore a mistake, and I'm not going to hover on it because I have other things that I need to accomplish. So I felt like moving forward and letting it go. Now, nobody wrote to me about this, just so you know. Nobody asked me any real questions outside of, I think, B. Pete might have, about, you know, did I hear from you or anything. As far as these notes in advance before the show, if my memory serves me correctly, I think I copied and pasted or whatever it is that you said to him and, might have offered to or done the same, whatever he said and sent it over to you. I might have done that because I think you guys, one of you blocked the other one on social media or something. So I was passing the notes back and forth. But generally not interjecting. I, again, wanted to organically allow the two of you to have the discussion and not be part of it, actually, and just sort of sit back and come in on the end is what my idea was, which was, as I said before, a complete failure. None of it ever happened, and it did just descend into argument over whatever was going on in the chat that night. So that, to me, is a useless thing to waste my time with, so I didn't want to pursue it anymore, and I did want to let it cool off and let it go. And that was what was in my mind at that time, so please continue.
Yeah, sure. No, I have no objections to what any of what you just said. No problem at all. But I would like to add a few things. Mm-hmm. What people don't know that didn't hear this was what was said off air. And those who said... Because I've got these questions, tens or by now, from, I think, American listeners, that why did you bail out? You should have continued. Or why did you bail out? You did the right thing. Or, you know, there was a lot of sort of reactions to what happened. Now, I didn't bail out. What happened during the time that we were off air was that B-Pete explicitly insulted me on a very bad way, in a very bad way. He said, you know, I have no respect for you. I don't want to discuss anything with you. That's what he said. I've lost all respect for you. And yet he refused to apologize for his part in all of this, which I did not. Mm-hmm. And I did not do the next day either to you personally. Has he ever said anything like that to you? Now, this is things. So why I bailed out, if you want to call it that, why I quit, was simply there is no point in going on this discussion any longer with B. Pete because he is not open to any discussion. He wants to sling mud for the rest of this night, and I don't agree to that. And, Chuck, I want to say I've been a part of your shows discussing, you know, the JFK case and economy and a lot of things, and I'm not a mudslinger, for God's sake. This is as far from me as you can get. Mm-hmm. But yes, I do have a temper sometimes. And I did at this point, too much. I have to agree. I'm not proud of what I said or what I did to B. Pete in the chat room, or what happened online in your show. And for that, I have apologized to you for that. This is nothing that I want to, you know, tell anybody about, but people sort of contact me and have questions about it.
I guess some people heard it. Yeah, I mean, I said, no one...
And people have heard about it.
And no one contacted me about it. I mean, I don't think that there might have been a couple of comments in a chat room a week later or something, but outside of that, nobody wrote to me or, you know, I didn't get any feedback on that show at all. So as far as I was concerned, I felt like maybe people heard the argument and turned it off and didn't really listen to it, which I would have done if I were a listener. I would have heard this start up and been like, I don't want to listen to this. And I would have turned it off as a listener. So that's what I figured did.
One of the reactions that I saw live on air that night, because I did have the chat room, in the left side of my computer. So I could see what happened. This is the best show ever, someone said. Mm.
Some people just enjoy conflict, Glenn. They always call this person out, challenge them. A lot of times I get that, and that's not what I'm here to do all the time. I've tried to debate people, and really, honestly, it's usually just a big mess because, I refer you to the 2015 JFK assassination special where I was encouraged by my producer to invite Jim Fetzer on, right?
I remember that.
And that descended into, Carmine and me and Fetzer all at some point yelling and screaming at each other, and Fetzer straight up insulting us, know, as much as he could. I think, the direct quote is you two both have your heads up your asses several times. I think he said it. And that's probably one of the more polite things he said, which is fine. That's what it descended into. Because he didn't like to be challenged on the points he was making, I often during my show will say, look, let me stop you for a minute and comment. And when we did that to him, he freaked out. I've done lots of research. I don't know what you two have done. And he started flipping out. And, hey, that's what happened. I don't enjoy that kind of show. That's not the kind of thing I want to hear. Some people love that. That's all they want to hear. Jerry Springer was a popular TV show for a long time because why? At some point, the girl takes her shoes off and goes to smack the guy, and security has to come
over here as well. Jerry Springer.
Okay. Well, I don't know what's on Swedish TV, honestly, but I'm sure you've seen it. Okay.
We're little U.S. as far as TV concerns.
Oh, okay. Then you've definitely seen this. And then there's been other shows that have emulated it because there's an audience for it. I don't want to even cultivate that audience, so it's not something I often do. A little bit of confrontation is one thing, but to focus on it, I don't think serves a point, so I don't do it.
Let me just sort of, I think I've said what I wanted to say for anyone to, and I hope this one is going to be found on the internet, onwards, what we've been talking about tonight, because now I feel that I've said what I wanted to say to you, and that's fine with me, Chuck, like I've always said, this honors you that you let me come online and do this and say this without any sort of restrictions, anything. And this is why I, before this happened, liked you so much, because this is the way that you're treating people online and offline, I imagine, because you've treated me offline as well as you have online for many years before this happened.
Well, because
when people tell me, a Swedish friend of mine said, well, if the way you describes this, it sounds like he was setting you up for public numbers, getting listeners. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, that's not Chuck. Well, what you're telling me sounds like that. And I hadn't thought, even begun to think in those sort of circles. But I have to say, some of the things you did, you could have done better that night. I'll stay with that.
Okay.
And that's fine with me. You have explained it tonight, and I'm fine.
Well, look, I don't argue. I don't argue that I probably could have handled it and turned things a bit differently. But maybe it's just because I'm not used to doing that. Where I have two hostile parties that I have to,
That's a fair point. I agree.
And here's the thing. If I'm trying to objectively give the opportunity for you to speak and for him to speak, whether it is a style of speech or it is something that is good to do, or if he's just attacking you or you're just attacking him, I'm giving you both the chance to speak your way, and maybe it's too loose. And maybe I need to figure out ways to take more control of a situation like that. But I don't like to have to do that. That creates problems. I really hate doing it. Even during the call-in shows, quite often, I feel like I've lost control of the show. But I always try to give an opportunity to everybody, even if they're angry with me. You want to take issue with me, go right ahead. And I will take whatever it is. I've had plenty of people call me stupid and everything else, and whatever, plenty of names, and it is what it is. I can take it. I've got a thick skin. But I let them speak pretty much. So long as they're not repeating themselves.
But let me just comment on that. What journalist doesn't get that kind of criticism, no matter how sort of big they are, within quotations. Right. Not all journalists get that. You're a good journalist, and I do regard you as a journalist. There's no question about that. You're treating everybody with respect, and you're giving them time, and you do have the intelligence to ask intelligent questions. And that's the best, that's really the mark of a good journalist. I don't even know if you have an education in that field or if it's or not, but I do think that 98% of your guests would agree with me telling you, you do let people speak their mind, and you do have questions about things right. now and then. Mm-hmm. During your shows, and that's a brilliant way to have an online show like the one you have.
Okay, well, I appreciate the compliments. The only journalistic training I ever had was in junior high school and high school, and I wrote for those newspapers. But technically speaking, I don't have any training as a journalist, not sure. Sometimes I viewed myself as a journalist, other times not so much. But either way. I believe I'm a conversationalist, and I try to allow conversations to ensue based on what it is the guest or the caller or whomever is on with me, letting them speak their piece, whatever it may be. And then I ask questions or make comments about what it is they've said. But I always try to allow them to express themselves, whether I agree or not. And I've had people be confrontational. In fact, Ryan Dawson came on this show because I had stated offhand that I thought he was racist. He freaked out a bit and challenged me. You let me on your show and I'll tell you off. And I said, okay, when are you available? I brought him on. He yelled at me a bit, talked to me about it. I said, you know what? I probably shouldn't have said that. As I look back on it, I did apologize to the guy. And I said, but I'm not sure if I should have now in retrospect. But that is where I stood at that moment, and his argument made sense. And I spoke without being entirely well thought out on the subject, and I was making what he saw as a very harsh accusation, because he's been called racist by a lot of people. And he was pretty upset about it. I let him tell me off.
Who was that again?
His name is Ryan Dawson. He's an alter indie media figure also. And he got very angry when he heard that I had called him racist on my show. It is strange to me. I have no idea, by the way, that I have Swedish listeners outside of you. I don't see that many, evidence of that many.
No, I think that comes from the fact that, some of the shows, and this started way back, that I sort of, on my Facebook page, these ads you have, I put them on there when I was on. So I learned them. There's this guy, this good guy, nice guy.
Probably.
Or intelligent guy. Yeah. with his shows. And some of them actually responded very positively. Oh, I've never heard of him. No, you should listen to him. He's a nice guy and nice subjects and nice guests and all that, interesting guests.
Well, you're
has in some way contributed right. to your listeners, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. And here's the thing about that, too, is that you are evidence that I will have people on this show that I don't necessarily agree with. I care very much about the JFK case, and I am opposed to the viewpoint that, the official story is correct. But I respectfully talk to people who disagree with me entirely. Yourself, Steve.
You do. You've always done. Long before the first time I actually heard about you was something with, if I remember, that was also regarding Fetzer somehow. And I heard about this blind guy, and I was, who's this guy? And this was back in, 12, 13 somewhere, I think, 2012 or 13. Okay. And I listened to one of your shows and I said, my God, this guy is good. And of course, Fetzer is a, in some ways, I guess, he's preferred guest, to put it mildly. And of course, in some ways, he's not. But I guess from many perspectives, he's a preferred guest because he's such a, well, I won't say it out loud.
Well, look, I see a lot of, he is the major problem as to why it is that people who advocate for the concept of conspiracy are often seen as, out of their minds. As far as I'm concerned, he helps that along. Meanwhile, he had me on as a guest on his show before I ever had a show, on that Real Deal podcast.
That might have been the one. Was that somewhere 2013 or something?
It might have been 2011, 2012 in there.
Yeah. That's the one where the first time I heard you, actually, or got to know about you.
It might be because he was sitting there and going over the Altkins photo and saying, oh, look at this. I see this coming out. And I said, well, I have a copy of that as well. Let me put it under my magnifier. It was live on air. And I did that. and I put it under my magnifier. And I said, Jim, I'm sorry. I don't see the same thing. Well, where did you get your picture from, Jim? And he admitted he got it from John McAdams' website. And I said, well, mine came out of the Chicago Tribune's archives, and mine is a, paper copy, and I'm looking at under, 800, 900 times magnification. And I'm sorry, sir, I don't see the same thing that you do. And people were like, wow, I can't believe you actually said. I'm like, what? I was just reporting what it is. The guy's telling me look at something. And I'm like, okay, let me look at mine. And I feel as though mine was probably a more, look, I'm not even, trying to disparage John McAdams, but if you download something from a website and you're making forensic declarations about something that's contained in a photograph, you're not working with anything remotely close to a primary piece of evidence or a source material. So that was the point I was trying to politely make to him, and he got a little upset with me. But I'm a jerk, okay, no problem. I didn't mind that. James Corbett had me on his show shortly after that, and we had very good discussions about, the real history of Lee Harvey Oswald and stuff like that, where I talked about his time in Russia and technically in Belarus, Minsk. But, that whole thing. But either way, that was a weird time period. But all right. Enough of that. Sorry, I kind of sidetracked for a moment.
No. It's great. Shook.
But I'm just explaining what it is that you're referring to, I think.
Yeah. So and that is a real good one because you destroy them.
Well, but politely. See, now I wasn't confronting him or screaming at him. I was very politely saying, well, look, this is my source. This is your source. One of us is working with something
a little
better.
Yeah, but his reactions, as I remember them, totally showed that he was destroyed. Not what you said or did. You were very polite, as usual.
Yeah.
But he was not. And he got even worse, the longer the thing happened.
And funny story about that. I didn't actually have Skype installed on any of my computers yet. I had to install Skype to be on his show. That was just, I want to have you on because you have a lot to say. And, and I've heard about you. And I'm like, yeah, okay. Sure, yeah. Why not? And I was not, I didn't have any stuff to be prepared. It just so happened I happened to have that file near me that had that photograph in it, because I used to have many, many, many paper files. And I had many, many photographic files that were all around me all the time because I was constantly doing research then. Okay. So,
yeah.
You have basically addressed all the things that bothered you. Is that right? Or do you have more?
Yeah. And I think we do have, I wouldn't say maybe total agreement, but pretty close.
Well, fair enough.
I haven't exaggerated or added anything or anything like that.
Okay.
And I think your description, well, we do have a bit of disagreement on a couple of points, but they are minor. The important thing for me now, today, was I got the chance to explain things who have asked me about this, whether they heard it or heard of it. And you gave me that chance, and this honors you, Chuck, that you did that.
I don't know. Listen, I appreciate the complimentary tone, but I don't know if it honors me. It's just the way I am. I would not be unfair to somebody who wants to make a rational point. And if they're going to discuss it with me civilly, they can come on here, even if it's in opposition to me. I do want to add, though, that, you said a couple of things in these emails, though, that did bother me. And I don't know, maybe it is, again, wording. Very much like, you know, I took the words charitable, you know, you were redirecting your charitable donations to mean one thing, and you took are you mad at me to mean something different, and so on. And so I'd like to cover a couple of those things, if you don't mind, and then maybe take a break.
That's fine. That's fine.
Okay. So one of these things in one of these messages, and I'm going to paraphrase here, I mean, unless you want me to pull up the emails, which I will do, but I think I can address it without quoting you. You know, one of these emails was a little antagonistic because you used the phrase like, what kind of man are you? And that you did say that you felt like maybe you had been set up. Now, I'm going to tell you that I resented both of those sentiments because I felt as though I did not set you up, one. And two, I also felt that why is it your place to question my manhood in any way, shape, or form, because I don't think you know me that well. That's two things. Okay, and I'm telling you exactly as I saw it. I don't think being hostile to you in the email, but I felt like you had a bit of hostility in there. Am I misreading what you wrote?
Well, the first point, about the, what was the first point? Also, you had 2 points.
Yes, it's basically about, you know, your discussion about what kind of man are you, which I felt like was questioning my manhood. And the second point was about setting you up, which you already did address, but I wanted to address again and tell you that I sort of resented both of those comments. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I apologize for that, the manhood stuff. But the setup, that's, I think I've explained that, why I might have felt that way, might have had reasons to feel that way at the time. But I think you've explained it I wouldn't describe it like that at all.
Well, regardless of how it played out. Okay.
No, I don't feel a setup. Okay. You didn't do it on purpose, sort of producing the thing that happened.
Okay, so
that would have been a setup. And,
right.
And you didn't do that.
So you do realize that was not my intention. That's correct, right?
I do. Okay. And I said to my friend who sort of suggested this when I told him the story, not my story, no, I think I said that a few minutes ago. You know, that's not Chuck. He's not setting people up. That's not him. Mm. But I couldn't help feeling that way. And mainly, I should add also, because you avoided me for a week before this show happened.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question that I felt avoided.
Mm-hmm.
And I do stand by that. And you might have had good reasons for that. I that's for you to decide or to explain.
Well, actually, I'd love to explain that when you're done. I'd love to explain
you've
that.
You've always treated me with utmost respect, and there's never any problem between us before I've participated in any of your shows, or even after I've participated. We've spoken for you know, hours at sometimes, and that's never been a problem. But this particular thing was a bit different. Like I said, it was different, and I don't know the reasons for that, but that's why I maybe might have gotten a bit too conspiratorial about this. You if you can explain it, fine. But I just, how I felt, and when I now, a couple of months ago, sat down with a friend of mine, a very good friend that I've, you know, he's a good guy, in all respects, and he sort of said, well, that story, you know, it does sound, I'm ambivalent because you do like this guy, but at the same time, there's no question in my mind that he, you know, there's something that doesn't fit the bill here.
Mm. Well, I'll explain it best I can, but again, under no circumstances did I intend to set you up. That was not my intention in any way, because that is simply what I would not do. It's not even personally attached to you. It's just what I don't do. I don't set people up. And that is almost never something that I would do. I mean, I've done over 2,000 of these. None of them have been based on, let's set somebody up and get them. You know, I've never done that in my mind. But let's go back to it for a sec. Go ahead. I'm sorry, were you saying something, Glenn?
No.
Oh, okay. Oh, I thought you were trying to speak. Sorry. Anyway, I was giving you space here. Okay, so back to this. No, I wasn't trying to set you up. And the thing is this. I think that there is a difference between when I was having you on for the JFK Myth Show and when I was having you on for this other purpose. And here's what the big difference is. When I was doing the Myth Shows, I had to coordinate many people that were going to come in and out during these shows. If you recall, Sherry Feaster had been on one of them. Joan Mellon had been on one. Carmine, I think Larry was on one of them. Rob Clark, all these different people, right?
Yeah.
So a little bit of organization ahead of time was necessary to get those shows to be contained within 2 hours and to be orchestrated a bit, because I had to have space for each person, right? To get, and usually I would say, bring whatever it is you would like to the table. Give me an idea of what it is, and that's it. And I was only doing that for the purposes of organizing each of those shows. My normal practice with any show is to get an idea of the premise and intentionally not have a back and forth with someone. And the reason is that it is all fresh when it happens on the show. There is no preparation that I had, and I can work with what it is I'm listening to. So in my mind, I don't skip over a question because I've already asked it and know what the answer is. I don't like to pre-interview or set things up or know exactly what you're going to present. I would rather it happens and I hear it for the first time along with the audience, so that my reaction and everything else is very natural and very in time with, well, I've just been shown this. And I'll often say that. We didn't discuss this ahead of time, did we? We didn't plan this. We didn't orchestrate this. I will say that to many guests, no matter what it is they spring on me, so that I'm always in a position of not knowing precisely what you're going to say, but just to have a general idea. That is my normal practice with every kind of guest, whether they are the most famous of guests or it is somebody who I decided is my buddy and has cool points of view on Twitter. It doesn't matter. I want to have a fresh interaction because that just sounds better. It feels better to me, and I think it makes a better presentation. It's my style. So my my not wanting to talk to you for the week preceding that show was me not involving myself in it so that it organically happened. Now, unfortunately, allowing the organic conversation to occur between you and B. Pete failed miserably as a presentation. I took that risk, and I lost my bet, so to speak, on that night, because it went very badly. And if you notice, I'm just saying the whole thing went badly, and I agree with you, there was probably many things that I could have attempted to do that may or may not have worked to take control of the situation, but because I'm not accustomed to that kind of thing where there's hostility and confrontation on my show, I was ill-prepared. I'll take all the responsibility for that.
Neither am I. I've never, ever, I've been interviewed in many different sort of venues, you know, live or in real life and so forth. I've never experienced anything like this before, mm-hmm. ever.
But I'm just making it clear to you that it wasn't like, oh, let me keep him in the dark, you know, because if you view it that way, then I could see how somebody would say I tried to set you up. I wasn't trying to keep you in the dark. I'm trying to keep me in the dark. You can prepare all you want. I want to keep myself in the dark so that I react to it as if it is completely brand new and fresh. Because otherwise, when I've attempted to do pre-interviews, and I did that a few times, and quite frankly, I've turned away guests who hand me lists of questions. Here's what you can ask. Here's what you can't ask. I've done that with one guest, and I will not do it again. I am not going to, you know what? Here's your approved list of guests. Well, then here's me canceling your appearance. I don't want this, okay? If you're going to come on and make a presentation and then I get to discuss it with you afterwards, I'll do that. But don't even show me the presentation. Let me listen to it. Let me hear your presentation.
And this is fine. All this is fine, Chuck. Yeah. But the point, as I brought up previously, is that I had a feeling that this would go wrong if we didn't, because I knew you know, the things that happened that particular night on the not on your show, but on the previous nights on the chat room, mm-hmm. was not the first time. You know, B. Pete, you may take on B. Pete and having him explain this story, but. As I told you, and as I also wrote in one of those suggestions that I had, if we do this, there's going to be one left side of the story or the subject that I mm-hmm. suggested, and you're going to have a right side. Mm-hmm. And I do remember some hints about that. What do you mean, right side? Not from you, but from B. Pete mm-hmm. At the time. And that was clear to me long before this. You know, he's a right guy, and I'm a left guy. And that's fine. That's fine. You know, I'm active in politics over here in Sweden. I deal with right wing guys every day, basically. Mm-hmm. That's no sort of surprise to me. But you underestimated it, I think, and you've explained it, and you've agreed with me about that.
Well, that was
the fear I had.
Yeah, and if you knew that ahead of time, you were correct, and I was incorrect about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I exactly. have no problem admitting where I fell short.
Dig in deeper to that. I have no intention of crucifying you or anybody else about this.
No problem. Look, and I've delayed the break a bit just so we could make sure we got all the way through this, but I felt like I should explain that. The next thing, just the very last thing that you brought up in one of these emails that I'd like to address is true. And by the way, B. Pete can respond to this on Friday if he likes. That's fine too. And you know what I'll do is I'll let him speak his piece. I don't know how it's going to come out because I don't control anybody. And I try not to edit anybody unless they're being completely counterproductive. And then in which case you'll hear me sometimes go to a break because I think it's like, okay, you know what? We're not accomplishing anything. Let's take a breather here. I do that, yeah. but you know, he's going to get to say what he wants to say about all this.
Of course.
At a certain point, and I got no problem being public about this, and I've been honest with B. Pete about it. I talked to him about maybe not doing. That was my voice kicking back. Sorry. I I've been honest with B. Pete about this, where I felt like, you know, him and I were arguing for a bit on the Friday night show, and I didn't feel as though that was productive. At a certain point, you know, and you mentioned, well, you've had your problems with B. Pete in the past. Yeah, that's true, and you could hear it on the show. It has settled down a lot, and quite honestly, I will tell you that I misjudged him quite a bit. And I think I admitted that a few weeks ago or maybe a few months ago. I don't know. It blurs together here, the Friday night shows. I'm sorry. So maybe I have the timing wrong, but I know not too long ago. I said on the show that I sort of misjudged him and thought of him as way more right-wing. And thought of him as way more in opposition to my way of thinking than he was. Sometimes it would get intense, though. And on occasion, we had argued. And one time, he even hung up on the show and didn't come back toward the end of the show. Okay. That actually happened. And you know what?
Well, I won't get into why I precisely understand what you're saying.
Well, no problem. I could very well see how, look, him and I both, I think, were rubbing each other the wrong way over certain things. And that has happened and may happen again. At the end, we usually can come back around, except, you know, with the exception of that one night where he said to hell with it and went and left. Because he was fed up with something I was saying, and I think we resolved that. You know, I have no current stress with him. Everything is fine, and we can agree and disagree on different things. I mean, he's about to go into his third part on the Hunter Biden laptop, which I didn't even want to focus on, but I've agreed to split the first hour on Fridays with him now. So whatever happens
I just said right wing. Now, what do I hear? The Hunter Biden laptop. Not Benghazi so far, no?
Well, no, I think that's kind of a past thing. But, you know, but see, remember this, I am not either left or right. I'm pretty critical of both sides of that bird, you know what I mean? Both wings.
I know, and you've told me, but you've always respected the fact, and perhaps, I don't know, that I am sort of this left-wing sort of exception on your shows whenever we've discussed economy, for example.
No, you're not a left-wing exception. It's just that you're one of the few people that I think is on the left that's willing to talk to me. But I'm perfectly open. No, really, I'm perfectly open to talking to left-wing people. And I've had some very left-wing people on this show, protesters that were involved directly in Breonna Taylor's situation here, protesters that were involved in the George Floyd situation have been on this show. I've had a former Black Panther on this show. I mean, I've had left-wing people. Joe Green is a left-wing guy, for certain. I've had left-wing people on this show, and I'm more than happy to put them on if they're rational. To my mind, if they have a point to make or they have something to educate people about, regardless of what their political affiliations are. Cynthia McKinney was a Democrat, right? She's been on my show. Perhaps I am more libertarian than anything else, if you're trying to put me into the paradigm. But, you know, what can I... And I do mean classic libertarian, not, you know, right-winger libertarian.
I know. Yeah.
Although, you know,
Chuck, is this, you are treating people, despite of their, and I've listened to many, many of your shows over the years, you're treating people as a journalist, as a true professional journalist. You're very good at this. And this is not flattering you or anything. You are a good person in that way.
Well, I
have no idea where you stand sort of politically. But just the simple fact that you are interested in what people from Europe or Sweden think about, you know, the economy or the JFK case, that's a good thing. I'm all for, you know, I'm not a journalist or so, but I do appreciate the value of information and especially I'd say, since we have all this social media and the Q and the Anon stuff and, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not going to go into, you know, the current Republican Party because that's an entirely different discussion.
Yeah, it is. And I'm, believe me, not pleased with that. But I mean, even for international perspectives, the guy that we called Australian Ben on this show, very, very much right wing. You know, and there are plenty of people that on left or right might object to my objection to the vaccination. There are plenty of people on the left that really freak out whenever they hear I'm not anti-gun. You know, there are people on the right that freak out when I say something like, you know, I'm against all drug prohibition. I think it's an absolute waste of time. You know, so I have a tendency to...
Who's perfect? Not even you, Chuck.
Well, no, listen, perfection, I've never claimed that. And I will say that it seems to me like if you want to be hostile with the opposite side of the paradigm from your perspective, not you, Glenn, necessarily, but just the general you, if you want to be hostile, you could find hostility with me because probably I oppose some of your core beliefs. Am I pro-life?
Yes,
no.
Sure.
But I mean,
sure,
online...
I experienced that. As you know, I'm a professional politician over here. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I expect that from people.
I mean,
when these kinds of discussions comes up,
right?
Of course, I am.
You know,
98% of the time, the discussions are fine. The debates are fine, even if I do them online, and even if I do them with someone outside of Sweden. Mm-hmm. Which doesn't happen too often, of course, but it does happen, and that's fine. That's democracy, for God's sake.
Well, you know, call it what you will, but I believe in the Socratic method, and I appreciate different perspectives. So I like to get I realize that what is going on in this country will look very different from somebody outside of this country. Whether they're in Australia or they're in the UK or they're where you are or they're in Ukraine. I'm very interested to, and I realize that me looking from the outside in to Sweden or to Ukraine or to, you know, England or Australia or any of these other places, my perspective is different. So there is no way that we should all have consensus. We're not part of a religious cult. So if we're thinking for ourselves, it just stands to reason we're going to come to different conclusions. I mean, I sat here on the Friday night show, right after Roe v. Wade was overturned in this country, And quite frankly, I was on there with a bunch of people that felt like that was the right thing.
A bad day for the U.S.
Well, see now.
I do remember.
See, but here is where, I end up being thrown in the left-wing category, right? I'm either a left-wing wacko or I'm a right-wing nut. And that is based on other people's perspectives, not mine. Because I'll tell you that.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
Well, because I'm not, pro-life, as they call it here. I believe I'm pro-life, because I don't trust the system well enough that they should be executing anybody. I think the death penalty at this time, because of the system, is not valid and should not be enforced. However, I do agree with the concept of the death penalty. So, if we had a system that was not so corrupt, if there was some sort of reasonable certainty that only the murderous among us were put to death, I would have no objection. Because I feel that that is morally superior to even imprisonment. Quite frankly, I think imprisonment is inhumane and spiritually unsound. Now, that is a position that pisses everybody off. But that is how I see the world. I believe that imprisoning someone is absolutely inhumane. It is more humane to put someone to death.
Have you talked to people on death row? What do you think they would prefer?
Well, I know that if I were on death row, I would probably want to live. But here's the thing. When it comes to justice and true cosmic justice, if you take a life, you surrender yours. I feel that way. Now, you can disagree, and that's fine. But I don't trust the system to implement this, because our system is far too corrupt. It is far too loaded against people that are poor. It is far too, and yes, indeed, here we go, left-wing America. Yeah, it's racist. And that is how I see it. Now, most of my listeners don't see it that way, and they give me an earful all the time if I say stuff like that. But that's fine. I see the world one way, you see it a different way. We all got to live here. Let's try and do that, okay? And I don't feel as though, and frankly, you could expand the reasons for the death penalty if the system was less corrupt, if the system was actually just. I think there are other crimes aside from murder that someone has surrendered their right to live once they have committed said crimes. I'm not going to expand on it any further. I'm actually very harsh about this, but I do not trust the system. The system has failed. So the system in place right now, executing anyone, is invalid in my mind. Now, that sounds like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth to some people, but that is exactly how I see it. And I do believe it is much more moral to execute someone than to imprison them. I do believe that that is a higher moral thing to do, not a lower one. And a lot of people, even people in my own true spiritual belief system, would object to me saying that, because life is supposed to be sacred regardless of the acts they committed and so on and so on. I'm sorry, I can't see it that way. If you commit a heinous enough act, you have surrendered your right to breathe. That is how I see the world. And I have no objection to it if there is a certainty, a reasonable certainty, a true reasonable certainty, that people have committed certain acts. I think that it is better for society and for them even that they are simply put down. And I do believe it is a morally superior to imprisonment.
Hold on, just one last thing about this.
the pay for play for-profit prison system in this country is also corrupt. And I do believe that I could describe it as the prison industrial complex, very much like the military industrial complex. And I do not support either. So that is how I feel about it.
You have good reasons for your beliefs. Absolutely. I don't doubt that. But, hey, listen, are we going on Oh my God, we're past an hour, aren't we?
We have actually consumed 1 hour and a quarter already, so actually I'd like to take a break if you don't mind, unless you want to add on to something. But I'm just trying to point out that I do have strong beliefs, but I don't often inject them.
I knew that already.
Yeah, no, but I don't often inject them, you see. I don't often oppose them and challenge. Now, Glenn, you tell me how it is that you're going to tell me how it is I'm wrong. Go ahead, Glenn, tell me. What's wrong with you? You're a liberal, right? This is not how I do things, Glenn.
Is that
how that's a joke?
How you view me?
Well, no,
that I would do that?
No. But that's my point. What good is that going to do, Glenn? Challenge me. Tell me how I'm wrong. Come on. Do you want me to? What am I, Alex Jones? Come on. This is not me. I know I got a raspy voice and I'm American, but you know, please, it's a different accent.
No. You're making a fool of yourself right now. Yeah. I know that because
on purpose,
I know you.
On purpose, though, Glenn. I'm making a joke.
I won't regard you as an idiot, but independent of your views. Political or otherwise, but right now you're doing something else.
No, I'm trying to make an exposition. I'm trying to show an example of what I think is foolish behavior. I'm stating that yes, indeed, I have an honest and legitimate viewpoint that comes from my heart, my mind, my ethos. Okay, so my emotion and my ethos together, and I can present that. And present it with strength, but I don't believe in this whole confrontational nonsense that some other people think is the greatest thing in the world. Let's argue. Let's go at it. I can't. Look, I'm capable of it. I just don't. It's not what I want to do. It's not what I think anybody needs to hear. There's enough of that crap already elsewhere. You want that? You can definitely, like I said, Jerry Springer. You want to hear Alex Jones scream? You know, and freak out and raise up your anxiety level. You know, the Bronx are gay. They're all coming after us.
What happened to him with all these money he's supposed to pay people?
Don't worry. He will not be in the soup kitchen anytime soon. All right. You know,
but he seems to be fine somehow. Mm-hmm. You know, the legal system and the judicial system in the U.S. And all that. This was a civil trial and all that. I do understand that much.
Yes.
But he's still going on like nothing happened. Now, when are the U.S. society going to stop this idiot?
Well, look, there's that. But here's the thing. When you sell a product, regardless of whether it's poison or not, if you have a customer base, they'll let you continue. Think about the irony of this. You know, I brought up the Sacklers on Friday quite a bit. When I was trying to make points about how people are responsible for horrible things and their companies are convicted, but they never are, right? And look, I ended up in a political thing with Jimmy James because he was defending Trump, because I brought up Trump, and I said, all right, throw Trump out of the equation then. The Sackler family, responsible for Purdue Pharmaceuticals, has been found liable over and over again for propagating the opioid crisis, okay? This is public record. I'm not stating any opinion here. They've been found liable. The Sackler family. And they are the ones who own and still own, I do believe to this day, Purdue Pharmaceuticals, who are literally responsible.
Now I remember. I've seen about them. Yeah,
for the patent on OxyContin, and it is clearly, you know, a big, huge part of what they call the opioid crisis here, right? They've been found liable, yep, state to state, various trials, civil rulings against them. Millions and millions of dollars in fines they're supposed to pay. Now, the ironic part about this, Glenn, and the sick part about our system, they're going to pay those fines over time, sure, to these different states who are recouping money because they are doing it under the premise that their state health systems were stressed by the actions taken by this company, by the marketing of this drug, intentionally selling it to addicts. Okay, this is what's been proven in court over and over again. And you know how they're going to pay those fines, Glenn? By selling more OxyContin. Yeah. That is the God's honest truth. That is what they're going to do.
You know, I was living in the U.S. as an exchange student back in 1975 and 76. And, you know, being a Swede, coming there, 20 years old. Now, we love the U.S. And not all of us that... You know, friends of mine, when I'm using the word, all of us, sort of doing this, being able to come over to the U.S., that was a big thing at the time, you know, working in the agricultural fields of northern Sacramento. Now, the U.S. that I see today, and when I look at, you know, and you're describing it perfectly, even if you don't realize, which I think you do. Mm-hmm. Now, the things that have happened to the U.S. since 1975 and 76, when I was living in U.S., is, you know, I can't get my head around all the changes and all the craziness. This fantastic country of freedom, of you know, development and new kinds of thinking. What the fuck is going on in the U.S.?
Yeah. Now, look, I can tell you, look, you just mentioned 1976, right? 1976, yep. I was 4 years old. This country, me becoming aware of the world around me started in that year. Okay. Like, so I was a child. I grew up in that time. And I must tell you that, as far as I'm concerned, what we have done ever since that time, ever since I opened my eyes to the world around me. And, I've stated on this show, I'm sure everybody's sick of hearing it. Look, when I was 3 years old, my father taught me how to read by using newspapers. So I was learning about the world around me while learning to read. And then my father educated me further when he took his own life in 1976. Then I was left to fend for myself quite a bit in my very young childhood. So I experienced the parts of invisible America that people are not supposed to talk about in polite society. I experienced a lot of the dark edges. And, I will tell you that, whether I was in the darkness or the light, we have done nothing but circle the drain since I have been alive. You know, I can't even imagine what this country looked like before I was born.
It was the dream. It was the dream. Even from, you know, we were not, you know, an underdeveloped country at the time. We're talking about Sweden, you know, an industrial success in the mid-70s.
Right.
You know, we'd gone from nothing in some 80 or 100 years to become one of the richest countries in the world. And, you know, guys like me had the opportunity to go over to the U.S., Northern Sacramento, Woodland, Davis, and helping these farmers over there, these huge farming areas with, and I was harvesting everything from rice, tomatoes, and everything. And I do remember the night because I was sitting harvesting corn, actually, in a tractor. You know, I don't know if you know about the corn plants. They're like 3-4 meters high, right? I was sitting there in the middle of darkness and listening to what happened that night in the U.S. What was happening was that Jimmy Carter was elected. And I do remember, I was so happy about that because I do remember him as a fresh, new sort of leftist. And I know by today's standards, I wouldn't use the word leftist because it's toxic in the U.S. as I see it from outside. But at the time, people were happy. And the people in Northern California that I met, they were happy about Jimmy Carter. We get something new. You know, we had Nixon, we had Ford, we had all these problems before with Nixon especially. Now, this happened and I was happy. I was happy with the Americans, but I was happy as a Swede. Happened. Fantastic story. And I do remember, you know, and I this harvesting, that was done at night. Mm-hmm. At night. I got on the shift at, you know, 6 p.m. and I went on to the next morning. Mm-hmm. Sitting there in this tractor, boom, 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 behind me when we harvest these corn. You know, So when I read all these stories today, what we see over here in Europe, and I know you're interested in what happened. You've always been interested in what happened with the views of outside of the U.S. Now we are looking at what happened in the U.S. There's not one word for it. You know, it's amazement. Fear, it is astonishment. What the heck is happening in the U.S. today? Why are these guys, you know, initiated, as I see it, you may or may not agree with me, but why all of this started with Trump denying the election results? And now we have this crazy, crazy, crazy people, you know, mm-hmm. Carrie Lake, Marjorie Taylor Greene, mm-hmm. you know, who are these? How can it be that a developed country with all the facilities, all the knowledge, all the economy, like the U.S. had, can accept people to get people like Carrie Lake or Marjorie Taylor Greene in positions of power mm-hmm. in the U.S. To me, and you know, your listeners may be angry at me for saying this, but that is fucking a crazy.
Well, you
period.
Know, look, well, that's look, that's the interesting that, thing here, Glenn. You and I might see this in a similar way, except one issue I have with what you just said. You think this started with Trump? I see this as the natural.
No, I know.
I'm sorry.
But continue, yeah.
I thought you said this kind of thing really kicked off with him. And I would object to that and tell you that this has been, they are actually, to me, the logical result of what has gone on for quite a while here, where there is a disconnect from so many different things. This is the way it's supposed to be. And I think the alleged left and the alleged right in this country, because I'm not sure what to make of them anymore, are both completely disconnected from what they initially were. I mean, there is nothing even remotely coherent about the left, to my mind, at this point, and there used to be. But everything has been on a deteriorating downward spiral when it comes to civility, logic, critical thought. In this country, the whole time I've been alive, I've been amazed, too.
I'm sorry. I don't want to interrupt you. But what you're saying, or what you started with, is the answer to the crisis on the right side is that the left is bad.
No, that's not the answer. What I'm saying is that, overall, everything has deteriorated. And to me, you see this as almost sudden, a lot of people do. And I wonder if it's because now there's a bit of alarm, considering the fact that, you know, to the best of my knowledge, the largest and most well-equipped, most expensive military on the planet is us. So we have the weapons. We have the ability to mobilize many things. And I would be nervous if I were any nation outside of here about just that, is that exactly how sane are the people that are going to be at the switches here? If I were outside of this country, being inside of it, I'm none too pleased. But see, here's where I get myself in trouble. I'm not saying the answer to the crazy on the right is the crazy on the left, but I also cannot accept either extreme, because neither one of them makes any sort of sense. And really, to me, they're both very totalitarian. They're just totalitarian about different things. And they serve different, strange corporate masters to me, as opposed to the people.
Well, let me ask you then. In today's U.S., what's the extreme, as you see it, that the left is sort of proposing?
You know, this very strange woke sort of culture where...
No, that doesn't cut it on my... The woke stuff, I don't buy that. Explain in detail, please.
Yeah,
please. I'm sorry.
I was working on it.
I don't want to sound rude here, but woke, yeah. You know, anyone, it seems to me, is using that for anything.
Oh, yeah, but right? I have no problem breaking it down for you. No problem. Just give me a moment.
Oh, fine.
And here's the thing about it.
Sorry.
When you have people instituting policies, okay, where, you know, you are not permitted to express things, which I feel to be very logical, like, you know, there are men and there are women, okay? This is not an acceptable concept any longer on that extreme side of the equation. A man or a woman, you can't define someone and state that is part of their identity. They can choose in their own minds what their identity is. You're not permitted to make statements of fact if they don't comport with what is supposed to be politically correct on that side of the equation.
I'm not sure what you're saying here. The left is obviously defending trans people, right?
Yeah.
And the right are totally not.
Okay, that's so, one way to look at it. But
so, yeah, well, isn't that true?
Well, no, not exactly. Because why am I to be penalized because I call someone she because they appear to be female to me? Am I supposed to be penalized for that, Glenn? Do you think that that's a right thing to do?
No, of course not.
I mean,
not
should,
at all.
Should I lose?
No,
should
no,
I lose
but,
my
but
job? Wait a minute. Wait,
ask the person in question.
Okay.
About the story.
Okay, but you see, you don't always, in every job that you have here or in every role you have here, have the opportunity to have conversations with people. So, on occasion, if you're working in a store at a very simple, low-paying job, okay, and you accidentally refer to a customer as ma'am or sir, because that's what they appear to be to you, and you don't have the right pronoun, there are people that will penalize you. They will take away your job in some cases. It's happened. It's not imaginary. Now, I'm not saying that every argument that sounds like that is legitimate, but it has happened. I've seen it happen. Okay?
So why isn't it...
This is being instituted by many people on the left.
By the owner of this transaction.
Because here's the problem. This is being instituted by people that have power on the left, making rules and laws, even, that allow you to be penalized if you do stuff like that. Not just if you work for the government either, but...
Why would you do stuff like that? Why would I, as a private citizen, have problem with someone regarding themselves as a trans person? What's the reason for that?
Well, here's the thing. If I saw you in a store from behind, and let's just say your hair was long, and I'm using you as an example, and I thought for some reason you were a woman, okay? If I said, excuse me, ma'am, you might turn around and say, I'm actually a sir. And that should be about the end of it, okay? Because it might be an honest mistake
yeah,
with somebody.
Absolutely.
And I've got long hair, Glenn. I've got long hair, Glenn. So, I mean, I'm trying to use an example I can definitely relate to. No, nobody's ever mistaken me for a woman. God, I'd be an ugly woman. But, you know, not too good looking as a guy either, but definitely an ugly woman. But long hair could be mistaken, right?
You're doing fine, Chuck.
It's okay.
I've seen pictures of you.
But long hair could be mistaken. You know, somebody could use the wrong pronoun and describe someone as he or she and when they're not. There are people that take severe offense to this.
Chuck, now let me interrupt you. It's not often I want to do it on purpose. That's BS, Chuck. How anyone looks from behind should not sort of have anything to do with how we sort of implement laws.
Yeah, no kidding. That is a very
right?
that's
do,
a very logical
agree
point.
With me about that.
That is a very logical point, Glenn. I'm trying to tell you about a reality that occurs here. That is not logical. This is what I'm saying. Now, if I made that mistake in a store and you took it up, okay, because you might be trans or whatever, it doesn't even matter actually. I use the wrong pronoun. And you could pressure the place that I work for to fire me. There are laws in support of that here in places that are run by some of these left-wing people, okay, who describe themselves as left-wing. They have put this in place. There are serious problems. And, you know, California is a whole different place from where you visited last.
Chuck, is the problem that they're left-wing or what they're proposing?
What I'm trying to tell you is that the right-wingers are not proposing these things. Left-wingers are. So, therefore, I'm only talking about the left-wingers that are proposing these things and making them happen and putting them into law in places. That is a reality that's occurring here. Okay? Or there are people that...
I'm listening.
Well, no, I'm just saying that there are, that is the actions that are by people that describe themselves as Democrats and... left in this country. These are the actions they are taking. I'm not making them up. This is what they're doing in certain places. They also, you know, at a certain point here, we're calling for people like myself who chose not to accept vaccination. Very extreme about that. Many public statements and proposals of laws that people should not be allowed to be employed if they do this. They should have their children taken from them if they make this choice. Things like this, this doesn't come from the right. This comes from the left-wing politicians and policy and lawmakers here. So that's what I'm telling you is crazy.
This particular point, we have, I don't know, 80, 90%, I think, agreement in my country over here in Sweden about exactly the point why all of us should vaccinate ourselves. Now, that... And we're fine. And I don't, you know, I don't know how much you looked into these curves and the statements from the, but Sweden was pointed out when we said, some of the experts we have over here said that, you know, we should let this have a run to start with. And then we should go in with our vaccines. And I'm not medical expert or something. Of course not. But since then, many people who during this time, since back in 2020, criticized us for this, of all kinds of reasons, experts even, you know, not all these, you know, I'm not talking about Fox News or anything. Now, what has happened since then is that, well, it turned out pretty good, you know, doing what we do, vaccinate the entire, and I do remember you and me, this guy, I don't remember if we were online or not, and I do respect your point of view, but I would also propose that you are wrong about your assumptions. And that's fine, you know, that's democracy. We discuss things and we have different conclusions about different things. And yeah, we've come out of this pretty good over here.
Yeah, but look, in Sweden, is there anybody proposing laws that if you didn't accept the vaccination at the time the government said you should, that you should lose your ability to be employed?
No.
You should lose your ability
and
to travel.
I would say even if I am a politician, the first answer would be, we didn't have to. We've vaccinated about many things before. It's never been a problem. We do believe the expertise about this.
Okay,
long before social media came on the agenda, we did believe in our experts about this. And sometimes, or most of the time, they were right.
Yeah, well, this isn't about social media, and this isn't even about the vaccination itself. What I'm talking about is discriminating against somebody who made a medical decision that doesn't comport with the common convention on this, okay?
Chuck, that's always been the case. Vaccinations has always had a downside.
No. Right? I don't care about that. You see, this is problematic. I'm trying to explain. It's not about that, okay? I'm not going to argue with you that poison isn't poison or whatever, because I see it as poison. Now, that is my point of view.
Oh, I know. You told me long before this about that.
Right.
Yeah, I do respect that. I do respect people. I'm not going to go hunting them. I'm not going to go do anything against them.
But you see, let me finish this. There are people on the left absolutely propose that I should have my children taken from me if I am of this mindset, and I do not accept it. There are people that say that I should have no ability to be employed if this is my mindset, if this is my choice. This is the narrow thing I'm trying to tell you about the left. It's not even about the argument on the vaccination. What I'm saying is this is where we are.
The U.S. has actually proposed this. Is that what you're saying?
There are people that have proposed this, yes, in many states where there is democratic control.
Have crazies on all sides, right?
Yes.
Both in the U.S.
That's what I'm saying. And you know, a point brought up in the chat room is that, yeah, at one time, the people that are currently on our left, their party, were exactly the party that, you know, didn't want black people to vote. That is absolutely true. They represented the majority of people that did that. That has now, you know, to my mind changed, not to everybody's, but to my mind it has changed. You know, but that is a true part of our history as well. Some of the people on the left now are very totalitarian about how it is they wish to control others. Okay? And you have totalitarianism on the right as well. To me, both sides are extremely dangerous when they are taken to their extreme. And they wish to engineer behavior and the social and moral design of people beyond common law, beyond acceptable what should be our constitutional law here. They have overreached all of them, in my mind, on both sides.
And your conclusion is exactly what?
My conclusion is that extremism in any form is dangerous. That is my conclusion.
Well, your conclusion at the about the subject in hand, about vaccination, was that?
About vaccination. Well, vaccination wasn't the subject. Yeah. The subject was actually the control of someone who made a medical decision. Because I was going to take that further, but we hovered on the vaccination a while. But making medical decisions, okay, for oneself as an individual, there are plenty of people who wish to make it so that the state makes that decision. And I don't believe it's the state's right to make a decision about my body. They certainly don't pay for my health care, so they have no right to pay for my health. They have no right to tell me how I should conduct myself. And my body, as far as I'm concerned, according to the Constitution, is one of those things that I have a right to be secure in. So, you know, my person, my papers, and my belongings, if I remember it correctly, I think that's part of the Fourth Amendment. I'm paraphrasing a bit. But, you know, it's one of those constitutional rights.
I think you know the Fourth Amendment better than I do. I'm sure you do. But still, Chuck, and now, if decisions made by individuals are devastating to the overall population, do you regard that as a problem or not?
If they are directly harmful, provably harmful, there is a possibility that, yeah, you could be held liable for that, sure.
And this is not, the COVID, as in your opinion, is not such a case.
No, I don't believe that we entered a time here where actually that was the case.
And you have the world expertise, the world. I'm not saying U.S. or
me
Swedish
personally,
or
no. Me personally,
against,
no.
Against you.
Listen.
You do have Marjorie Taylor Greene and no,
I'm not siding with her.
But you do have these guys.
No. You. I'm not siding with them or taking their advice on this. I'm taking a look
at. I didn't say that.
No, I just want to make it clear. I'm taking a look at the fact that our government and our media told us, you know, this is safe and effective. This is the only way to prevent yourselves from getting this. And meanwhile, the companies that developed it, if you actually read their research, it said this does not prevent people from getting the virus. It doesn't. Even in their own literature, Pfizer says it.
No, but that's one side of it.
That's one side of it, yes.
If you head up on this, you should know that those who does not vaccinate, mm-hmm. spread it. Why there?
Well, interesting, because no, it's not true, because if you take a very good look at the different regional responses.
It's very true.
No, it's very untrue, and I'll tell you how it's untrue. Take a look at the results overall in this country, just this country, and you take a look at the higher rates of vaccination in certain places and other places where maybe you had some resistance, and guess what happens overall over time?
Oh, yeah, over time. Yeah. But mm-hmm. the price you're paying before overtime kicks in, that's the point.
Yeah, that might...
Hundreds, thousands, or even millions of people are dying because they're not vaccinated, especially those above 65, which I happen to belong to. Chuck, you're wrong about this.
Yeah, okay, well, that is not what I see, and that is certainly, I think
what
if you took
see?
An ob- I
and think that's you, an argument.
I think if you took an objective,
your bet.
No, Chuck.
You have a better argument than this.
Yeah, I do have a better argument than this. It's real simple. The facts and the statistics do not pan out according to that nonsense that you're spewing right now. That's the truth of it. Because in places where
nonsense, and you're not.
I'm telling you right now.
It's a good thing. I like you very much, as I've told you.
Because you're very much spewing a certain line, and I don't think you're looking at this objectively
at all.
No,
it's not a certain line.
Yes,
it is. It's a word line about this. You are spewing a certain line. I'm not.
I see. And tell me something. Just one real quick thing. How many people do you think have been harmed by this vaccination, this alleged vaccination, which, by the way, not even certain it qualifies as a vaccine, considering the amount of booster shots and the fact that people still come down with the disease after being vaccinated. I'm not sure if that would technically qualify as a vaccine, but we might have to look that up very carefully. Considering
that's nothing new with vaccines.
That's nothing new.
There are always people. No, not at all. If people are getting hurt by vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
Singular people.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I do agree with you. But on, you know, I'm not a medical or a historical expert about these things, or vaccination expert, whatever you call it. But if you go down history and look at this, we've eliminated several deathly viruses before.
Mm-hmm.
That
killed
millions and millions of people.
I understand this
is
the conventional.
This is one of them. And look at China.
How long have they been vaccinating in this country for measles, mumps, and rubella, the MMR shot? Do you know?
No, Chuck.
I'm just curious about it.
No, you did interrupt me. You never do that.
I'm asking a question because you're spewing the typical line here as opposed to answering a question about this.
Yeah,
and this
is true. It's true.
Okay. Sure. So it's not true then that we've been vaccinating for 50 years in this country for MMR, okay, which is measles, mumps, and rubella, and we still have outbreaks of measles, mumps, and rubella in this country. Is that true or not?
Chuck.
Is it true or not? I'm asking.
Put me on, and we'll discuss this, seriously.
We're on. I'm asking you a question, though.
I'll be happy to be on there defending vaccines. And now we can take a separate discussion about this. This came a little bit abrupt, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
You've been the best host ever.
Well, because this makes me very, very angry, though, because, look.
Why?
Again, I've been vaccinated.
Have I made you angry?
Well, no. This subject makes me very, very angry because I've been personally attacked for it. And it has.
I know that.
So this especially is one of those things that, I get a little upset. So I'm just asking you an objective question. Do we still have measles, mumps, and rubella? Even though we've been vaccinating for at least 50 years for it here in this country, do we still have them here or no?
We do. I know.
Okay.
Chuck.
I'm just asking.
It's not a simple yes or no question.
Well, it is a simple yes or no. Do we have those diseases outbreak or
that
not?
That particular is yes or no.
Yeah. Okay.
I know that, but you hide the other side.
I'm not hiding any of it. I'm not hiding any of it.
Chuck, let me put it this way. Let's get away from all the experts. Do you believe that I should believe what you were saying tonight?
Not at all. I think you should make your own informed.
Listen about
the
vaccine.
I thought that was
about
a question.
The word expertise about this. I mean, sometimes the word expertise has it wrong. That has happened, but not too many times. But let me tell you this. Mm-hmm. When I see this in the U.S. and also they're over here as well,
mm-hmm.
and in Europe, they're small and so. When I see them, and they cannot explain their views,
mm-hmm.
then of course, it's if it ever was a question about anything, it stopped right there, because the arguments are political. It's against government. It's against all the sort of whatever conspiracy.
Not the direction I was going in. I was asking you questions, and I wanted to see if you could answer them about different things here. Does the Pfizer literature on their development of this mRNA vaccine, in air quotes, does that literature state that it stops the spreading of the disease?
Okay. Fair question. Agree. That's a fair question. Mm-hmm. Now, let me tell you this about this. I know that several of these medical companies are making profits. They're grotesque, and they're not truthful. They haven't been truthful for decades to come, even. Now, I don't know whether, but this is not the virus in this case. It's not about one company. It's about several. So all of them agree. They know how to solve this. All of the vaccines about this are perfectly alignable. We can.
Okay, if that's true, then Pfizer should be perfectly alignable.
So this is not. Listen.
Oh, okay.
This is not a U.S. question. This is a world question.
Yeah, sure.
And I think sometimes, Chuck, this is where I, and not only you, but other Americans. Yeah, you are the biggest country in the world, but you know, you're not alone. And sometimes what says and what is discovered and what is happening in other countries are also a variable and very important factor in some cases. Mm-hmm. And this is a prime example of that, because what has happened about the COVID virus is extremely important, that the world is coming together about this, and we have been largely up until now.
Wrong, but you're not answering the question I tried to ask 5 minutes ago, you see, which is, did you read the Pfizer literature, and does it say that this product that they developed, and they are one of the leaders in this country for it, and Moderna is supposed to be just as good, and that for a little while they told us Johnson & Johnson was just as trustworthy, and that they had developed a similar vaccination.
I didn't read that one. Okay. I did read shortages of them and many other companies.
Okay. I'm curious. I've only read a few of them.
There's no.
See, you're not letting me ask the question. You see what I'm saying? You're not letting me even ask the question. I'm trying politely to get it in there.
Sorry, really,
I am. But here's the polite question. In the literature you read, okay, because I've read a few of them, but the Pfizer one really stuck with me. All right. Because it was the most well fleshed out of the discussions, where it showed the research and all that. It was the most accessible, and I read it. Pfizer's literature, does it say that the product that they are describing as the vaccination here, okay, I'm stipulating to them describing it as a vaccination, does it say that it prevents the spread of COVID-19? Does it say that?
I don't know.
It says precisely the opposite, that it does not prevent the spread of the virus. That is their scientific research.
Your conclusion of that?
My conclusion on that is that our government and our media lied to us by telling us that this brand new product, before anybody saw the scientific research, said that they had monitored it very well and that they knew that this would prevent the spread of the virus. I am pointing out that they lie.
Chuck, let me ask you then. The other worldwide pharmaceuticals?
I don't know. I don't know country to country. Hold on. Different countries have accepted different versions of the vaccination from different companies. That's true. Whoa. Different countries have accepted different companies as far as being the acceptable vaccine. They have a different set of vaccines in the UK, I assume.
Yeah, but the limits are not
limits
different.
Are what?
It's the same. Does this work or not?
Okay, but here's the thing. Different companies were acceptable in different parts of the world. I'm answering what you said. The worldwide consensus is not even to use all the same vaccine, is it?
No, but on the other hand, Joe, there is no consensus that non-vaccination is doing anything except killing people.
Well, that's interesting because,
give me one proof of what I said against what I just said.
I'm alive.
People are dying because they are not vaccinated.
Well, you know what? I don't buy that. I don't buy that people are dying.
Why not?
Because the only people that I know that have allegedly passed away.
Is it facts?
Theory? Where's theory? I'm telling you about people I know. Right? So there's no theory involved.
You know.
So there's no theory involved. I'm telling you what I know from direct observation over a situation, right? That's not theory.
And that's going to make the case of this.
No, you ask me what I know. So I'm telling you what I know.
Yeah, well, it's going to make your conclusions work.
No, not necessarily. I'm answering your question. You asked me what I know about this, and what I know is that the only people that have died, okay, of the virus that I know, the only people that have even nearly died of the virus were at some point vaccinated. Not the unvaccinated people I know. None of them.
Chuck,
okay? Personally, that's what I'm telling
Chuck, you are far too intelligent to sort of deny the fact that the world is under threat by the COVID attack. You know this. I know you as an intelligent person.
And as an intelligent person, I know that there are people that die from many different diseases.
Yeah, but they've always done that. For hundreds of years.
Indeed.
Before anything like medicines came about to treat this.
Tell you
this
what.
Shit.
Tell you what. Have you ever heard of the Dr. Zelenko story at all? Have you ever heard of Dr. Zelenko?
I don't know what you mean. This is not one doctor or another. This is medical knowledge.
Yeah, medical knowledge. Medical knowledge at the time, in real time, at the time when the virus was emerging, who treated 1,500 patients, right? Who treated them when they came down with this.
Who are we?
Who are we? I didn't say
yeah,
we.
Yeah, you said we treated.
No, I said he treated 1,500 people.
Sorry.
He treated 1,500 people. Dr. Zelenko. I'm answering who he is, who he was, actually.
Okay.
He died.
Okay. I'm sorry. I missed that.
Sorry. Yeah. Let me be clear. I asked you if you were familiar with the story. He treated 1,500 people when there was no vaccine, when it was not available to the public, right? And, you know, among those people that were sort of resistant to the idea of being treated, okay, 1,500. He had 75 deaths out of 1,500. Now, that percentage is not unlike something that somebody could see. This is a small sample, I admit it. But that percentage is not unlike something that somebody might see in a whole of a community demographically when a pneumonia outbreak or a flu outbreak, an influenza outbreak occurs. You might see a death rate like that. And when you factor in comorbidities, this guy, without the benefit of the vaccine, treated people perfectly fine. He chose not to be one of the early guinea pigs because he already had cancer. But at first was not objecting to the vaccination. I urge you to look at this story and the things he did in real time before the vaccine was available with the outbreak of this virus. And what community was he treating? Orthodox Jews. Okay? Who might not be entirely amenable to getting a vaccine. What I'm stating is there are examples, and the sample sizes may be small, but then again, take a look at the research actually conducted by the drug companies and take a look at their sample sizes, if you will, and see what happens in those sample sizes, in those tests that they said they were monitoring, and now our FDA has also admitted they weren't really monitoring them.
But have you considered the other side of the same thing? Namely, that how many have not been subjected to any sort of dangers or sicknesses and all that? Have you looked at that side of the same problem?
When looking at comorbidity, the only people, again, that I have been aware of who have died as a result were very unhealthy to begin with, and some of the most unhealthy people that I've known who came down with it, you know, who were very worried that they were going to die from it, did not. You're talking to one of them. Because in 2020, I got extremely sick. I'm fairly certain. I'm not somebody who claims that the virus doesn't exist. I'm very certain that's what I had in March or April of 2020. I was sick. Real bad.
Chuck,
yeah.
It's 0400 over here.
Yeah. My apologies. Right, I've actually gone to the two-hour time.
Like I said before and online, it's interesting to discuss things with you. But thank you for having me on tonight.
Look, I appreciate it. And you know what? You're right. I was not looking at the time, and I'm sorry. It is rather late where you are. So regardless of how this conversation ends, no commercial breaks.
Chuck, I appreciate you and what you're doing.
No commercial.
There's
breaks.
No question about that. And I'll be on your show if you want to have me. Be on what's been recorded tonight.
Yeah. That's no. Hopefully, I can have you back on and we can discuss some other things because I do value your viewpoints
on
statistics.
Like you're discussing. You have opinions. I do too. You are on the right or libertarian, and I'm left, and I stand by that. But I think what I've listened to tonight and also before is that we can do good stuff.
Fair enough. So I'll leave it that way. And look, you can think about it afterwards, and so can I, and so can the listener.
Yeah.
And so we'll leave it at that for the night. Glenn Buckland was with me for 2 hours.
A question. I have a new computer.
Yeah.
Now, I do remember there was this one chat room. And I can't find it. I searched earlier today about what chat room was that? About your, you know, where I also participate. You know, I can't find it.
Well, what I'll do is I'll get that to you right in your Skype in just a minute. I'll give it right to you. Just give me a minute. We will close out the show. So no commercial breaks whatsoever tonight, but here we are. And Glenn Buckland was with me for 2 hours, okay? And we went back and forth.
I thought you right-wing guys didn't have any restrictions.
Well, look, I didn't hold you back from saying anything you wanted to say, and we wound up arguing about something else. So what can I do?
Well, I was there before, right, remember? And did I ever misbehave in that forum?
I don't judge you. I don't judge you, Glenn. I don't judge anybody. I just try and do the best show I can and try
Send
and get out.
Send me the link.
Useful information. I'm going to do that right now. And for you guys listening out there, I am merely Ocelli. All of you are indeed the effect tonight.